our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is a part of a speech delivered on February 18, 2019 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, during a meeting with the people of East Azerbaijan. The meeting was held at Imam Khomeini Hosseiniya in commemoration of the anniversary of Tabriz uprising of February 18, 1978.
Ultimately, the enemies want to create and keep in power a government that is weak and obedient, a government that does not have enough power, a government that would not stand up against America. These are the goals. All these measures and all these courses of actions have failed so far. They have been unsuccessful so far. Of course, they have made a lot of efforts. They have adopted various courses of action, and I'll mention some of them in my speech today. The enemies did not spare any effort, but they were not successful because the people were vigilant. We have good elites in our society. We have good people. We have good government officials. Thankfully, the enemy has not been able to realize its goals so far. The revolution has continued its path and has moved forward. What happened during the revolution? Notice that these are the points. The revolution that took place in Iran caused some changes which were fundamental in terms of their death.
Allah, Allah, la ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
It is on the basis of such changes that one can push society forward and make far-reaching changes. These essential pillars were firmly built. I would like to mention a few of the changes that were made. Of course, everybody knows these things. We all know them. They are right in front of our eyes. But Allah the Exalted points out the existence of the sun in the Holy Quran. I swear by the sun and its brilliance. The Holy Quran, chapter 91, verse 1. The sun is in front of our eyes, but Allah the Exalted swears by the sun in order to attract our attention to this obvious and huge entity. In the same way, we have to pay attention to the great phenomena that surrounds us. Therefore, the purpose of pointing out these things is to turn our attention to them. First of all, before the revolution, the government which was ruling over our country was deeply opposed to Islam. They were not very strict about Islamic appearances, but they were after destroying the roots and the essence of Islamic faith of the people.
Alhamdulillah, Alhamdulillah, all praise.
praises to Allah, all praises to Allah.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, welcome to this exclusive interview with the Deputy Secretary General of Al-Nujaba Movement, Hajj Nasr al-Shimri. Welcome, Hajj.
Thank you. God bless you.
In this episode, we will cover the anniversary of the Islamic Revolution in Iran. During this anniversary, strategic analysts say this revolution that was victorious in 1979 changed many equations in the world and the region and led to the emergence of Islamic resistance movements in the region. How do you view this situation, and will these resistance movements continue in the future, or will they fade away?
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على محمد وآله الطيبين الطاهرين.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, greetings to you and to your respected followers and viewers. We must congratulate the Islamic world and all the oppressed people across the globe on the anniversary of this revolution, which provided a voice for the oppressed that can reach every corner of the planet. In response to your question, probably before the blessed Islamic revolution in Iran, there were resistance and freedom movements in the world, and especially in the region, but they did not possess the power or capabilities or importance. Even the most popular movements, namely the ones in Palestine, resisted with rocks, protests, and with their hands or burning tires, because they did not possess any weapons that could reach the enemy. This was clear by the way the Islamic and Arab world retreated during that era. If we were to analyze, we will see that since the birth of Iran's Islamic Revolution, the enemy has been retreating. Israel's major slogan is "From the Nile to the Euphrates." When the regime used the slogan in every confrontation with Arab countries in the region, it would steal and occupy more territory. Ever since the founding of the Islamic Republic, the establishment and the brothers in the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps have been supporting, arming, and training resistance movements. As a result, Israel, since its inception until now, has been in retreat. Israel fled from Lebanon. All of South Lebanon was liberated completely from Israeli control. After its forces reached Beirut and raised the Israeli flag on the presidential palace there. In occupied Palestine, Israel has retreated too. Now, parts of Palestine, despite being small in size, have some kind of autonomy. Just recently, we commemorated the anniversary of Israel's 22-day war on Gaza, which is a small city. For 22 days, the Israeli military, including all its forces, its naval forces and air force, encircled and attacked Gaza, but at the end, they were forced to retreat without achieving any goals. The resistance movements are present and have achieved great victories. Perhaps the clearest example is the American occupation forces fleeing Iraq. America came to Iraq bringing its air force as well as more than 300,000 soldiers and established the military bases there. They had hundreds of bases in different locations on Iraqi soil. and they possessed the supreme authority over everything, raiding homes, making arrests, closing roads, violating schools and universities, killings, and every criminal act imaginable. Despite that, the Americans themselves admitted that 80% of their military losses in Iraq came from what they called armed groups backed by Iran, by which they mean the Islamic resistance factions. So the resistance in the region, while imposing a new geographic status, is here to stay, and God willing, a complete axis will be formed. This resistance will transform and achieve its main goal. The goal at the current stage is to wipe out the entire American military presence in the region, to avenge all the terrorist acts U.S. forces have committed, and it will be a base for the arrival of our hidden imam.
Also, as a result of the aftershock of the Islamic Revolution, there are uprisings and popular movements from Yemen to Nigeria after 4 decades of the Islamic Revolution. Some of these movements have reached a mature state. How do you evaluate this situation?
Look, we take a simple example, the resistance in Yemen. Today, Yemen, in terms of its economy, is considered a poor country, which is under full siege by its enemies. There is a big coalition led by the Takfiri Wahhabi regime in Saudi Arabia. The coalition includes other Persian Gulf Arab countries, backed by the Americans and Zionists, to impose this blockade and kill the Yemeni people. In fact, they have destroyed everything in Yemen. However, today, and after more than 5 years, it is the Yemeni resistance that's capable of setting the terms and conditions on the enemy, and not vice versa. The Yemeni resistance is the one that changes the map of political confrontations. Today, the Yemeni resistance targets Saudi Arabia's interests deep inside the kingdom and threatens Israeli interests. Today, all are convinced that for those waging war on Yemen, there is no benefit. In the coming days, we will witness the Yemeni resistance emerge victorious and we'll see a return to negotiations, because this issue cannot be resolved the way the Saudis want. The Takfiri Saudi Arabian rulers will witness a major defeat, and there will be a victory for the Yemeni resistance and a change in the region. Today, the resistance is not only in Yemen, it also exists in Iraq and Lebanon and contributes to creating political change and the balance of power. Consequently, no Lebanese power confronting the Zionist entity can change the political map or make military changes without Hezbollah. Hezbollah is the one that draws the map, and it decides when and where a battle will take place. The same in Iraq. The Iraqi resistance, namely the Popular Mobilization Forces, are the ones that made Daesh flee, of course in cooperation with others, but it had the biggest role. The resistance kicked out the first American occupation before Daesh. It's now leading calls for confronting the new American occupation that Washington wants to resume in Iraq. As I noted earlier, the resistance exists inside and outside Yemen, and even in Afghanistan. Therefore, today, the balance of power is in the hands of the resistance. This points to maturity, evolvement, and progress. Some resistance factions have political wings that attract the majority of voters in some countries. Today, the resistance possesses maturity, weapons, thinking, doctrine, and strategy. No side can close this movement, and no enemy can change anything as long as the resistance is present.
The leader of the Islamic Revolution, during a speech marking the 40th anniversary of the Islamic Revolution, spoke about and described the second phase of the Islamic Revolution. Do you see the Islamic Al-Nujaba movement in Iraq part of this strategy?
Definitely, for several reasons. Firstly, this Sayyid, this commander, Imam Khamenei, brings together a large portion of the Iraqi population and a big and important portion of the Islamic resistance factions in Iraq. He constitutes the religious leadership and the legal reference that is worshipped by Shia Muslims through carrying out its orders and adhering to its directives. In addition, Ayatollah Khamenei has today raised awareness that managed to wage stage a struggle so large that would make the Islamic Republic and its allies a global axis against the world's arrogant powers. Today, America does not talk about China, which is its biggest economic rival in the world, with the same level of danger that it speaks about the Islamic Republic and its allies, who are the most important political axis in the world. Therefore, today, the Islamic Republic is managing an axis against an axis controlled by the United States. It is very clear that the American axis is heading towards a breakup. Today, we see that the democracy America has always promoted and used as a pretext to invade and intervene in regions across the globe is fake and forged and is under scrutiny even inside the U.S. According to their own officials, around half of the American people are accused of terrorism, reject their democratic results, and were trying to orchestrate a coup. The axis led by the Islamic Republic is on the rise and has constant victories. That's why the American axis, day after day, is a broken, doomed one, primarily because the slogans they have been promoting and selling has become unconvincing, even in their own country. So you are someone who is a practicing Shia, a believer, complying with this wise leadership represented by Imam Khamenei. You should consider that his speech is applicable to you. His speech applies to us too, because as a resistance movement, we get our ideology from the Islamic Revolution. As a person concerned about political affairs, his speech also applies to you, someone important with a high standing like Imam Khamenei.
بثقل ووزن السيد خامنئي دام ظله.
في عهد رئيس الأمريكي السابق ترامب.
During the era of the ex-American President Trump, the Islamic Republic was subjected to maximum amount of pressure. So was the Iraqi resistance movements and the axis of resistance in general. They were also subject to assassinations, some of them high-profile figures from the political and military leadership. But this era has come to an end. How do you evaluate the past and whether the maximum pressure of Trump has affected the axis of resistance and how do you see the future?
There is an important saying by the late Imam Khomeini. It says, whoever is connected to Allah does not retreat. If you are a person with the belief that there is a life after this life, that there is a judgment day, accountability and punishment, and that there is a major cause, you are currently defending the most noble defense and jihad is that a person sacrifices his life for the sake of Allah and for the sake of that belief. Then there will be no defeat and no harm can threaten you while you wish and ask Allah to grant you martyrdom. We heard a lot from martyrs Haj Abu Mehdi al-Muhandis and Haj Qasim Soleimani that how they had a desire for martyrdom. They prayed for themselves to achieve this goal and even requested all the believers to pray for their martyrdom, and they sometimes cried, longing for this martyrdom. So at the end, the enemy cannot break the will and the courage of those connected with Allah and their goals in the afterlife. But yes, the pressure was intense, the war was intense, and maybe the most intense one was the internal sedition imposed on us. You really get hurt when you see a section of your people being brainwashed by this fake advert of the global arrogance in the United States, which led some of them to become hostile towards those who defended and protected and sacrificed their lives for them. This was a little painful, but at the end, the belief of the resistance was victorious and remained stable. The resistance, the popular mobilization forces, and the Islamic Republic stayed despite all the pressure, and the enemies collapsed one after another. The last of them was the dark, humiliating, and shameful scene for the American president. You can compare the farewell funeral procession for the martyrs with the humiliating farewell that this criminal Trump witnessed. These are the results. This is the evidence showing who was victorious and who was defeated at the end. As for the future, believe me, in Iraq, for example, America failed to impose its will on Iraq despite having 300,000 soldiers and advanced weapons and occupational rule. Today, America is also unable to reimpose its occupation on Iraq or to control the country or threaten the Islamic Republic and neighboring countries in the region with 10 or 20 or 30,000 soldiers. Neither can the American ambassador impose his reality, whose main task is now how to protect his personnel and interests. Today, the reality is imposed by those who believe in Allah, believe in their faith and in their honor and weapons of the resistance. The enemy has been defeated, and the U.S. cannot return with the same power that arrived under former President George Bush, nor can it come with the same craziness and arrogance under Trump. So we are at the stage of removing this hegemony from the region and the victory for the resistance, God willing.
The Nujaba Islamic movement are considered to be one of the resistance factions active in Iraq. They do not shy away from being influenced by the Islamic revolution and the ideals of the late Imam Khomeini and Imam Khamenei. Why this influence by the thinking of Islamic Republic and Imam Khomeini?
The guardianship of the Islamic jurisprudence is a religious authority. So if you read the religious books of any religious jurist, you will see that any practicing Shia Muslim will not be excused in the hereafter without retaining his religious activities to a religious jurist, considered a fully qualified one like Imam Khamenei. The guardianship of the Islamic jurisprudence also deals with other issues, as he is the representative of the hidden Imam. So he leads the nation and its interests and oversees its defense and security in the face of foreign dangers. This is part of your Sharia duty, that you are connected with this religious authority. We can compare the differences in the position of the Islamic and Shia reality before the guardianship of the Islamic jurisprudence and after we began practicing it. You will see the difference is very clear. Today we, the Muslims in general, and the followers of the household of the Prophet Muhammad in particular, have become an important factor in global affairs. We have become head-to-head to all American projects and those of the global arrogance. Frankly, this is a badge of honor that brings pride after pride. I recall here a saying by the martyr Al-Sadr, who called on others to join the school of the guardianship of Islamic jurisprudence. He said, before this idea, we were like the dead. And today is like we have been reborn. This is really very clear. All of us will return to Allah and will be held accountable on our actions that we believe are in consistence with the verdicts of the qualified jurist. We take this all to Allah. And if we are not embarrassed in front of Him for being a follower of the guardianship of the Islamic jurisprudence, you will not be embarrassed in front of people either. It is pride for us and all who follow this school.
ولجميع من ينتمي إلى هذه المدرسة.
With the victory of the Islamic Revolution in 1979, the Ba'athist Saddam regime cracked down on the Islamic movements in Iraq, especially against the Shia and their scholars. He killed many of them, including high-ranked clerics and the martyr al-Sadr. Even the war he imposed on Iran was possibly to target the Islamic movements there and prevent the same scenario of an Islamic Republic in Iraq. Also, the Islamic movements in Iraq, including Al-Nujaba, raised the banner of resistance against the U.S. occupation forces. How do you see the future in Iraq with the ongoing confrontation between the resistance factions and the American occupation in Iraq?
Firstly, the tyranny of the Ba'ath regime and the criminal Saddam, nobody can imagine that time unless they lived through it. If you had a religious book in your home, that was enough to get you executed. If you grew a beard, you were executed. If you participated in congressional prayers at mosques, you were detained, put under trial, and could be sentenced to execution. If you got caught making a pilgrimage to Imam Hussein's shrine, you were detained, put on trial with a lengthy prison sentence or execution. These were not rare cases. Hundreds of thousands of Iraqi people were executed under these charges. Not everyone was executed in Iraq for political reasons. Many were executed for practicing their faith in a very simple manner. But as you know, this wasn't a short period. The Ba'ath regime ruled Iraq with an iron fist for 35 years. After it collapsed, everyone thought the Iraqi people would welcome the American occupation with flowers. The former American president said, "The Iraqis will welcome us with flowers." But what happened was quite the opposite. A few days later, millions on foot made a pilgrimage to Imam Hussein's shrine. This happened after 35 years of oppression and attack. attempts to distance the Iraqi population from their religion. So the whole process failed to bear any fruit. Secondly, the resistance emerged in Iraq less than a year after the American invasion. We did not greet them with flowers. We greeted them with rifles and shotguns. The Iraqi nation knew fully well that the Saddam regime, which oppressed them for 35 years, was a creation of the United States, and it was a tool of them. This is not a secret. The leader of the Ba'ath Party, when they overthrew the leader of the Republic rule, Abdul Karim Qasim, said, "We came to power on an American train." I mean, the Ba'athists did not hide their links to the American embassy. During the war on the Islamic Republic, the American president would call the tyrant Saddam Hussein by his first name. None of them spoke with each other using titles. They were on a first name basis, and they signed their letters by writing on the bottom of the page, "Yours sincerely, Saddam Hussein," and the reply, "Yours sincerely, Ronald Reagan."
The Islamic Republic produced great men who may go on to make history. Among them is Martyr Haj Qasim Soleimani and Martyr Abu Mehdi al-Muhandis. May Allah please them. These two formed schools for the following generations. How did the revolution create these men, and how was this school formed, and how will this school be in the future that these men form?
Normally, the personality of a leader sends his rays and lights to the people who follow and join him. This is clear from the cause of Imam Hussein when he decided to sacrifice his life. His companions rushed to do so too, because they had been instilled by their leader. As for this great revolution led by Imam Khomeini, may Allah bless him, his light was also felt by many. From this school, some of the most important figures to emerge are martyrs Haj Qasim Soleimani and Haj Abu Mehdi al-Muhandis. They were affected by this school. They were inspired by the words of martyr Muhammad Baqir al-Sadr, who famously said, "To melt in Imam Khomeini's school as the Imam had melted in Islam." They followed this great personality and used many of his thoughts, and later they became a source of light to everyone who followed them and fought alongside them. We are privileged to have been part of this school that was represented by the two martyrs. We are absolutely sure that by the help of Allah and the firmness of this faith, tens or hundreds of people similar to Haj Qasim and Haj Abu Mehdi will emerge.
On the other hand, the revolution has created men like Haj Qasim and Abu Mehdi al-Muhandis, and after 4 decades of the Islamic Revolution, the opposing axis, if we look at some of the countries that claim to stand by the Palestinians, especially Persian Gulf states, these countries like Bahrain, the Emirates, and even Saudi Arabia are embracing the hands of the Israeli entity ties with Israel. How do you view this axis?
We have a saying in Arabic, "Lies have short wings." In reality, there was never any confrontation or animosity between the Zionist entity and the rulers in Saudi Arabia or the Emirates or any of the nations that have normalized ties with the Zionist entity. The Saudis are one of the biggest allies and friends of the Zionist entity. It was the biggest defender of Israel's presence and its interests in the region. There is no better evidence than the Wahhabi rulers in Saudi Arabia, who have committed tens of slaughters and waged wars in the Arab and Islamic world but did not fire one bullet at the Zionist entity. As the ex-American president said, the sole guarantee to maintain the Zionist entity is to keep the Wahhabi rulers in Saudi Arabia. All that has happened is that the secret is no longer a secret. What was below the table is now above the table. Honestly, the Arab Muslim populations in these countries reject treachery, any normalization, and the presence of the Zionist entity. At the end, these governments will disappear soon, God willing, and the people of these nations will unite to wipe out this Zionist entity.
In conclusion, Haj Nasr al-Shimri, the Deputy Secretary General of the Al-Nujba Islamic Movement in Iraq, thank you very much.
Thank you. God bless you.
And thank you, and may Allah's peace, mercy, and blessings be upon you.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
Hello and welcome to the debate. 42 years ago, historic events sent shockwaves across the world. Iranians toppled the dictatorial monarchy and put in place an Islamic Republic. The revolution put an end to the domineering policies and exploitative practices of world powers in the country, on top of them, those of the U.S. Since its inception more than four decades ago, the Islamic Republic has been targeted by wars, conspiracies, assassinations, and unprecedented sanctions. The country has weathered the pressures and plots and even made great achievements, despite all odds, among them science and technology. And on top of that comes accomplishments in its military industry.
Iran's 1979 revolution had serious repercussions for the country's military. Following the establishment of the Islamic Republic, the US and the UK, two of the main military suppliers to the pre-revolution ruling monarchy, cancelled all previous arms deals and orders. The Pahlavi monarch's allies also took several other steps, including banning countries and companies from providing Iran with spare military parts or technical assistance to undermine the revolution. At the time, the Islamic Republic did not have to rebuild its defense capabilities entirely from scratch, but the Iraqi-imposed war changed everything. The lengthy war with Iraq proved that Iran needs to stand on its own two feet. While Saddam Hussein could get anything from top arms manufacturing countries, nobody was willing to even sell barbed wires to the Islamic Republic.
We went to one country after another begging for a single Scud missile to defend our people.
Tehran understood that the new strategy regarding its defense capabilities should be based on independence and self-reliance. The post-revolution Iran, through over four decades of existence, has greatly increased its defensive capabilities, such as maintaining and modernizing many of its weaponry and military equipment, as well as producing indigenous systems for its particular needs, with a strategic approach that has enabled it to remain a regional heavyweight. Air defense systems are an especially important component of Iran's military strategy. The country has domestically produced an advanced air defense system that utilizes mid-range, high-altitude, solid-fuel missiles. Buffeted by sanctions, the Iranian military now depends heavily on its ballistic and cruise missile programs. The Islamic Republic has state-of-the-art anti-access capabilities that can target military bases and aircraft carriers. Over the past decade, Iran has developed an array of domestic electronic warfare capabilities, including battlefield tactical communications equipment resistant to electronic warfare measures. It has also manufactured various command and control mechanisms, military satellite jammers, and a number of ciphering and deciphering systems. Iran's naval ability is mainly contingent upon ultra-fast speedboats and anti-ship cruise missiles meant to deter potential enemies in the Persian Gulf. The Islamic Republic has also developed short-range missiles that can be launched from a variety of naval platforms, including speedboats, to target enemy warships.
Well, lots of accomplishments made there. Let me now invite one of our guests to this debate. We'll have Director of the Risalat Strategic Studies, Sam Mehdi Torabi, from the Iranian city of Qom. Good to have you with us, Sam. Welcome to the debate show. As you know, Iran is celebrating the 42nd anniversary of its Islamic Revolution these days. What's the secret behind its flourishing cause, despite all the pressures by world powers, especially from the U.S.?
Actually, there's two points that explains why we've been able to survive, not only survive, but to flourish, as you said. Mm-hmm. The first point is that Iran's revolution and the Islamic Republic of Iran is a religious project. It's a religious movement. It's a religious revolution. And a religious revolution in the sense that it believes in God and it believes that what it is doing is going and struggling on the way of God, in the way of God. So this is very important, and this is very different, and this is actually one of the things that at the time of the revolution was basically, we were told that God and religion have no more place in the managing of human societies. You were either a communist or you were a capitalist, and there was no third way, but we showed to the world that there is a third way or another way, which is the Islamic way and the religious way. Mm-hmm. So that's number one. And number two is that the revolution and the Islamic Republic is based on the will of its own people. The people conducted a revolution. It wasn't the army. It wasn't some, you know, vanguard elite, Leninist vanguard elite, some communist party. It wasn't some sort of a movement that was run by elites who just, replaced one ruler for the other. It was a popular revolution that the people themselves conducted, as they also conducted the war. It was a popular movement. The people changed the regime. The people established the Islamic Republic of Iran. And to this day, the reason why we are able to survive is because it is the only country in this region, and maybe one of the few countries in the world, where the system and the governance of the country is based on the will of the people.
Right. Sam, Iran has left behind many crises and conspiracies since the victory of its revolution in 1979. One major chapter in the history of post-revolution Iran is the invasion of former Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein. And he was aided and abetted, as you know, by the U.S. and its allies. And that war made Iran even stronger. Let's have your opinion on that and the effect of that war on the Islamic Republic.
Well, actually, Behrouz, I was in the city of Najafabad, mm-hmm. in the province of Isfahan. And as you know, it is the city in Iran with the highest per capita
number of martyrs.
Amount of martyrs.
Exactly.
In relation to the population. And the people there, the Hausa in Najafabad, was kind enough to invite me today to have a meeting with the clergy, with the seminarians, and with some of the families of the martyrs. And so, you know, it's about sacrificing. It's actually not, a very strange thing. When your country is attacked, you have to defend it, and the Iranian people defended it, and they sacrificed the best people that they had, the youngest, the young, who had all the hopes for a future, who might have been able to emigrate to other countries, who might have decided that they're not going to get involved in these affairs because of their own personal desires. But all of that didn't matter. The youth at that time rose up, went to the front, and defended its country and defended the country and defended the revolution and defended the democracy that we had established. And this is why we were able to defeat them during the war. And it's still the same thing today. If you look at what happened in Syria, the war in Syria, and again, to go back to Najafabad, we have Shahid Hojaji from Najafabad, who was the young father who, you know, at the maybe the sweetest time of his life, where he was a newlywed and he had a young baby, he decided to go to Syria and to fight Daesh and to prevent Daesh from taking over Syria and Iraq and then eventually trying to take over Iran. And, you know, famously he was beheaded. And in that video that Daesh made, in that cruel video that they made, he showed all the courage and all the faith and the deep belief that we have as Iranians, and he became a symbol of that. And so this is the reason why we were able to survive all these things.
Okay.
From that time, from the beginning of the revolution until today.
Sure. Now, joining us on the phone from the Answer Coalition, we also have Richard Vicker out of San Francisco. Good to have you with us, Richard. Welcome to the show. As you know, Iran has been an independent country since the Islamic Revolution, no more a satellite country of the United States. Is this fact not a thorn in Washington's flesh?
Well, thank you, and yes, certainly it is. The United States invested a great deal of money and military power and economic power in, and of course, in the intelligence operation in 1953 that overthrew the first democratically elected government. And really did create the conditions that for Iran to become a puppet of the United States, a source of great, great enrichment for the oil companies and the banks and the military industrial corporations in the United States, but at the cost of incredible suffering for the Iranian people. The widespread use of torture by the Sadak between 1953 and 1979 took the lives of tens of thousands. Mostly young Iranians, and it was a terrible disaster for Iran, and the revolution restored Iran's independence as a country, and has been viewed ever since, not based on any of the things that they talk about democracy or Iran developing weapons, but just that Iran escaped from the clutches of U.S. imperialism, mm-hmm. has never been forgiven in Washington.
Mm-hmm. Richard, let me ask you a second question because you joined us a little bit late, and go back to Sam. In 2018, Richard, former U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton promised the MEK terrorist group a regime change in Iran by the end of 2018. He promised that Iran won't be celebrating the 40th anniversary of its revolution. So what kept that pipe dream from realizing?
Well, that's Bolton, you know, and you know, John Bolton, in addition to that statement, a few years ago, he was asked, what's your policy on North Korea? And his response was, no North Korea. Mm. In other words, it would be eliminated as a country. It would be wiped off the face of the earth or you know, subjugated. And that's Bolton, but Bolton's been wrong. He was wrong about Iran. He's wrong about Korea. His ultra-hostilities, ultra-aggressive foreign policy advocacy has not borne fruit for the United States. It's caused a lot of suffering, again, for people around the world, the sanctions, the assassinations, and so forth. We know about that, but, you know, that's Bolton, and Bolton, you know, really stands against the forward march of history.
Yeah, maybe also the like of them, like Pompeo and some others. And let's go back to the city of Qom and bring in Sam. Let's have your opinion as regards the root cause of Washington's hostile policy toward Tehran, irrespective of which party is in power.
Yeah, the root cause is a strategic one, which is that ever since the British Empire was the first empire, a truly global and planetary empire. Since the time of the British Empire, the British strategists, and then later the Americans, who were the inheritors of the British Empire, determined that in order to rule the world, this is their own words, I'm not making it up, mm-hmm. in order to rule the world and to command the world, you need to control West Asia, Eastern Mediterranean, and West Asia. And Iran is at the heart of West Asia. In fact, if you want to, you know, summarize what West Asia is, it's actually Iran. And so basically, for them, it doesn't matter you know, who's ruling in Iran and who's ruling in America. In order to be able to be the global hegemon, they have to rule West Northwest Asia, which means they have to rule Iran. The last time this was clearly stated was in an article by Charles Freeman in the 2016 elections in the American Conservative, when Trump was talking about, you know, maybe leaving the Middle East, and as they call it, the Middle East, we call it West Asia, and leaving Saudi Arabia and all that. He wrote a very long article talking about if we abandon the Middle East, if the Americans leave the Middle East, then they have to abandon any sort of pretense of ruling the world. And the reason for that is because West Asia is the ultimate crossroads in the world. Anyone who wants to go from east to west, from north to south, has to pass through here. And it's not just about the fact that the Americans or the British could be able to transport their ships or their military or their airplanes or the land routes through here. It's what is called, and what Charles Freeman in the article called strategic denial of West Asia to any potential rival, any global rival. We saw that during the Cold War with the Soviet Union, the Truman Doctrine regarding the Eastern Mediterranean, which obviously includes part of the Middle East, and then later the Eisenhower Doctrine, and then later on the Carter Doctrine. So the point is that for the American elites, who are the inheritors of the British Empire, and in a way are continuing that empire, but in a different form, they have determined that it is their vital interest, and they will never let go. The beautiful thing in Korea is that we took away the heart of West Asia out of the hands of the Americans 42 years ago, and that's why they are continuing to bother us, and they will continue to bother us. And the only solution is we kick out the Americans out of West Asia, as was the declared policy by the Islamic Republic following the assassination of Haji Qasem Soleimani, as so declared by the leader of the Islamic Revolution and the National Security Council. And this is going to happen, and Iran will take its place as the natural hegemon of West Asia. And after that happens, and when these fake regimes in these southern Persian Gulf states, and when the fake apartheid Zionist entity do not exist, when that is transformed to a Palestinian republic where everybody has equal rights, and when these Arab dictatorships, these medieval monarchies, are democracies, then we will have peace and prosperity in the region with Iran as the natural hegemon of the region.
Now, Richard, different administrations of the White House kept imposing sanctions on top of sanctions against Iran. The first U.S. sanctions, of course, were imposed when Jimmy Carter was president. Now, that trend reached its apex during the Trump era when the so-called maximum pressure campaign was launched, and putting, in American officials' own words, the toughest sanctions ever on Tehran. Now, given this hostile attitude, is it possible for this profound distrust to vanish?
Well, it can only vanish with an end to these policies. And, you know, today we're hearing from Biden and Blinken yesterday and today talking tough about Iran. You know, that no, the sanctions won't be lifted before the there's a return of the U.S. and to the table with Iran under the JCPOA. You know, this just continues. So, and I think we have to see, as your other guest was referring to, the history, and to remember, you know, what was done to Iran. And the British Empire, as you mentioned, the British Empire ran its navy, which was the key to the whole empire, off Iranian oil after Churchill converted from coal to oil, a little over 100 years ago. So it was called Anglo-Persian and then Anglo-Iranian. And, you know, today, of course, it's known as BP, and it's not there anymore. But the suffering of the Iranian people who worked in the oil field was just indescribable, but that ran the empire. And this is something that the story that's not told in the United States to the people of the United States, the real history, and who was the aggressor and who was the victim of colonialism, and what a profound impact that it had. But, you know, to see a change in this is going to require the people in the United States take action against the policies of the government of the United States, which, as was said earlier, continue under both Democrats as well as Republicans.
Right. Sam, Tehran has managed to boost its military prowess greatly in all that, in the presence of unprecedented sanctions and pressure. The country is arguing that it needs to be strong militarily, given all that has gone through since the early days of the Islamic Revolution, i.e. foreign-backed sabotage and assassination operations, military aggression, espionage, incursions, coup d'etat conspiracies, you name it. Let's have your comments.
Yeah, well, actually, it's called strategic deterrence, which is something, you know, anybody that has a rational thought and doesn't have some sort of a problem with rational thinking does for their country. They create strategic deterrence. Now, we've done this on a regional level. So, for example, the Israelis or the Saudis know that if they attack Iran, they won't exist 5 minutes later. And so this has...
Well, unfortunately, we've lost contact with Sam. So from on the phone, let's bring Richard Becker. Richard, Iran has turned into a major player in West Asia region. One instance is reaching out to Iraqis and helping them defeat Daesh on their soil. And conversely, the U.S. and Trump's wars created Daesh, which wreaked havoc across the planet. Still, Washington's blaming Iran for playing a destabilizing role in the region. On what basis do they make such a claim?
Well, I think it's really it's very clear that Iran played the key role in the defeat of Daesh, and of course it isn't gone altogether, and in defending the Syrian government against what looked at, if we remember back in 2011, 2012, when all of these major powers and others got together, it looked like they would, you know, they would crush Syria, which is, you know, is a key country in the region. So that's the reality of the situation, and it's not going to be the American government that decides, you know, to let this happen, for Iran to be a regional power. And of course, Iran is there. Iran is in the region. It's the largest country in the region, in West Asia, along with Turkey. And it's, you know, it's not going anywhere, and it's not going to be overthrown. I think that that's an illusion, and keeps being the hope of the U.S. government, whether it was Trump or, you know, Biden wants regime change too. That's really what they want, and they want regime change in China, and they want regime change in all the countries that take an independent stand and don't bow to the dictates of Washington.
All right. Okay. And then we come to the end of this debate show. Thanking my guests, we had Director of the Risalat Strategic Studies, Sam Matthew-Tarabi, from the Iranian City of Rome. And also on the phone, we had from the Answer Coalition, Richard Becker, who joined us from San Francisco. I'm your host, Behrouz Najafi, and I'll see you next time.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.